Okay, well, first of all, thank you very much to the organizers for providing the opportunity to speak here at this nice place. All the work that I will present today is joint with Erdal Emsis from the Catholic University in Chile. And, well, what I want to talk about, yeah, this may sound scary, has something in common with both previous talks. But then again, the good news is I will only do the first computation that you have to do for the system that I'm considering. And all the rest I'm not able to do. So, okay, I want to study a system of Q bosons on a finite lattice. And contrary to what most people do, there are no periodic boundary conditions, so I have open-end boundary conditions. And, well, this is interesting enough, but still, I need some motivation. So I will first dwell a little bit on what was my motivation for studying this type of problem. And it comes from a very old problem studied by Gaudin in 71. And he considered this Schrödinger operator with delta potentials. And if you just look at the black part, that's just a Liebig-Linacker Hamiltonian. But then Gaudin studied this problem on the half line, and with a method of imaging, you get these other potentials here. And you can also include an external field or boundary potential. So this is the Hamiltonian, and it's now no longer only symmetric with respect to permutations, but also with respect to sign flips. So it has hyper-octahedral symmetry. It's symmetric with respect to the group of signed permutations. So here's the notation. Delta is just Laplacian and n variables. This other delta is the Dirac delta function. And actually, I'm looking at considering paper particles on a circle. So the configuration space is Rn mod Zn. And my delta potential is actually the Dirac delta comb. So it's periodic too, right? So that's what I'm interested in. And well, following Lieb and Linacker, you can map this to an eigenvalue problem for a free Laplacian on a fundamental domain of this torus with respect to the action of the hyper-octahedral symmetry group, so which just permutes the particles and which flips the sign of the particles. And the fundamental domain is what is known in mathematical literature as the Weil-Hell alcove associated with this hyper-octahedral group. So here is the fundamental domain for the circle modulo this action of the symmetric group, and also taking into account the sign flips. Okay, so the eigenvalue problem for this Hamiltonian becomes just the eigenvalue problem for the free Laplacian on this alcove, and so now you have boundaries. And so the correct boundary conditions that come from these delta potentials are Robin boundary conditions on the balls. So that means that the function on the ball is proportional to the normal derivative. And here are three parameters, because you have three types of walls where the particles collide, where the largest particle becomes equal to a half here, and where the smallest particle position becomes equal to zero here. Each carries its own coupling parameter, and they are related to the parameters, coupling parameters of the delta potential in this way. And on the here we have these coupling parameters for the delta potentials. Okay, so very old problem. It's known you can solve this by the beat ansatz. So you take a suitable linear combination of plane waves. And let me illustrate it in the case of two particles. So here is the Weil alcove. It's just this triangle. And here are, in this case, three boundaries. Here's where the particle positions coincide. Here's where the smallest particle hits bottom. And here's where the biggest particle hits the roof. like, and you have so normal derivatives on the walls which are equal to the value on the wall. So that's the eigenvalue problem. And you can solve it by the beta ansatz. Take a suitable linear combination of plane waves. First you take a nice combination to meet the boundary conditions here, and you get the beta ansatz type function. And then to meet the boundary condition here, you also need beta ansatz equations. From now on, I will always consider that all my walls are repulsive. So it means that the normal derivative is positive in this, well, is proportional. It means that the absolute value of the function grows to inwards. Okay, so that's actually the only regime that I can properly deal with. So if it's the walls are attractive, everything is hard, as we all know. Okay, so this was easy. I didn't even write down the beta ansatz eigenfunction and the beta equations, because actually I want to do all that stuff for the Q boson. But why is that? So the problem with the beta ansatz for me is here that I want to verify that the beta ansatz eigenfunctions form an orthogonal basis of my Hilbert space. That's usually an aspect that's a little bit suppressed. Not everybody worries about that, but that I worry a lot about that. And well, for some people it's clear, those beta ansatz eigenfunctions of a self-adjoint Laplacian. So what else can they be but orthogonal functions? Yeah, there's a complication. If you really look at the eigenvalues, which are discrete because our configuration space is compact, there are possible degeneracies in the spectrum. It's hard to exclude them. And so you cannot really conclude from the Hamiltonian alone, from the fact that the beta ansatz eigenfunctions are eigenfunctions of that self-adjoint Hamiltonian. You cannot really conclude that the functions are orthogonal. And then you think, well, but this is an integrable system, so we have more commuting quantities, and they should be able to separate the spectrum. That's true, but if you really construct these commuting quantities, maybe using some kind of degenerate affine Hecke algebra, then it turns out very difficult to prove that these higher quantum integrals are also self-adjoint. So you're in a kind of in a vicious circle. It's this orthogonality problem is not so simple as it looked. And actually, well, been stuck at it for a long time. What's the solution? Well, employ a Q boson lattice regularization of the system, and then a continuum limit, and then everything becomes much simpler. Well, some previous literature on this topic, in the case of the ordinary Lippe-Linacker system, so just with pairwise delta potentials on the line or on the circle, actually, of course, Lippe-Linacker constructed eigenfunctions. And then the orthogonality and the completeness of this wave functions was shown much later by Dorlas. And he also uses a lattice regularization, but he uses quantum lattice NLS, the one of Kurepin, Isergin, that system. I could also use that system, but it's much more difficult to perform the continuum limit in this case, because you don't have such explicit handle on the beta ansatz eigenfunctions. So, okay, this method of Dorlas was adapted a bit by Emsis, my co-author, and he proved at least also in the hyperoctahedral case that we're considering here, the completeness. So he proved that the eigenfunctions are dense in the Hilbert space. But I still want to know that they're also orthogonal. And so that's still open until recently. So that was my motivation, and that's why I wanted to study this finite Q boson system. And in the end, the study itself turned out very interesting too. So independent of the motivation, it was quite interesting for me to look at this stuff. So what's the finite Q boson system? First of all, I have to remind, or not remind, tell you what's a Q oscillator. So it's just a kind of a deformation of the harmonic oscillator. So you have a creation annihilation operator, here annihilation operator and a creation operator, and you have like a Q deformed number operator there, t to the power n. So t is always the square of q. I will both use t and q, and I couldn't get rid of one of them, because if I get rid of the t, then I have a lot of q squares in all my formulas, and if I get rid of the q, then I have a lot of square roots of in my formulas. So I use them both, but it's always t is always q squared in this story, right? So here's the Q boson commutation relations, but yeah, I put them with a T. Some people use call it T boson for that reason, but here it's really not necessary. So what's the difference between this Q-deformed oscillator and the ordinary oscillator? The commutation relation between the creation operator and the annihilation operator is not equal to 1. The Q commutation relation is equal to 1, but the commutation relation is equal to the this power of the number operator. T to the n is like the power of the number operator, but the number operator itself is not in its algebra, so we treat it as a separate generator. And this notation is a bit strange, but it's like a separate generator. And so the first commutation relation here says that the creation operator really isn't a creation operator, it adds a power of t. And here, this one eliminates a power of t, so this is really an annihilation operator. This one just says that that this generator is invertible. So this is the Q oscillator, and it's well known in physics literature. And the Q boson system that I'm considering is built of Q oscillators on a lattice. So here I have a finite lattice, and here you have Q bosons generated by these created by these creation operators. So in my case, the lattice in this example has only 5 sides, otherwise the drawing would be too big. But it's enough to understand the picture. And now, normally what people do is that you have periodic boundary conditions, but as I told at the beginning, I don't have that, so these sides are not identified. They're different sides, and I will put some kind of boundary interaction on those sides. And this boundary interaction is very simple. It will not create particles, it will not leak particles. It will do something like multiplication by the number of particles at the boundary. Right, so anyway, we'll see the Hamiltonian in a short while. These particle configurations you can conveniently encode in a partition where the parts of the partition correspond to the positions of the particles. So here, for instance, I have 3 Q bosons in the position 5, so I get 3 fives indicating 3 particles with position 5. And here I have 4, 2 fourths, and so forth. And in this order, this becomes a partition. This notation here is the multiplicity of 0 in the partition. So this counts how many particles you have on the 0 side in this configuration. So I can hop from this picture to a partition. It's a short way of denoting this. So here I have 14 particles and 6 sides. You have also the 0 side. We have no particles on the third side, as you can see. Okay. Now, what is the Hamiltonian that I'm considering? It's a usual quadratic Hamiltonian, but remember, everything is a bit weird here, but because we have Q oscillators, not ordinary oscillators. And here we have hopping terms, which move particles to the left. Here we move to the right. And here are the boundary terms. So it follows from the Q boson commutation relation that here we are annihilating and after that creating. And this composition is just equal to the Q number operator. So this is the Q number operator. It counts the multiplicity on site M, it gives the Q multiplicity. And here, this gives the Q multiplicity of the site, of the other boundary site. And we have two parameters regulating the strength of these boundary terms. So if this would be ordinary harmonic oscillators, we would basically have just A plus, and then the occupancy number of the M site and here of the zero site. But here everything is Q-deformed. So this is the Hamiltonian, and this we're going to diagonalize. Well, before we diagonalize, I have to give a precise meaning to the Hamiltonian. So I will prescribe exactly the action of the Q-boson algebra, or these Q-oscillators in the Fock space, and then compute also the action of this Hamiltonian in the Fock space. So since the particle configurations are encoded by these partitions, and I have only M plus one size, the particle position never goes beyond M. So the Fock space, the end particle sector, is just a space of all functions over this finite lattice L and M, where N is the number of parts and M is the biggest value the parts can have, the positions can have, right? So it's a Fock space, but the N particle sector is only finite dimensional. So that's kind of weird, but it's kind of nice too. So here is the way these operators act in the end particle Fock space. So this is the creation operator. It's defined through a kind of duality. What this means is that I add a part of size L to lambda. And what this means that I delete a part of size L to lambda, assuming that I have a positive multiplicity, otherwise it will just be zero. So this prescribes the action of the annihilation operator and the creation operator. Here we also multiply by the Q multiplicity. And this is a Q number defined here, Q integer. And the number operator just counts the number of bosons on the site L as a power of T. So it's an easy exercise to check that this really satisfies the commutation relations of the Q oscillator. So we have a representation, and we can now compute how the Hamiltonian acts in this representation. And the Hamiltonian acts in a very simple way. It's a kind of, it acts on this function of on the partitions as a kind of a discrete Laplacian. And it is this operator that's meant to be a discretization of the Laplacian that I had at the beginning of the talk. So the boundary conditions are incorporated in these coefficients, which count the Q multiplicities. So what's the value of the Hamiltonian acting on a function on a certain point lambda? It's basically summing over all neighbors and multiplying with the corresponding multiplicity in the direction of the neighbor, and there are also diagonal boundary effects. Well, it turns out that this representation of the Q boson algebra is unitary. That is, that the creation operator is really the adjoint of the annihilation operator, and the number operator is self-adjoint if you implement this inner product. So just the L2 inner product, and this is the weight function. Many people will recognize this weight function. It's just 1 over the Poincaré series of the stabilizer of this partition with respect to the symmetric group. The boundary conditions are very mild, and this means that you don't see them in the orthogonality measure. They are not there. So you can work with the usual orthogonality measure. Here I've written down Q factorials. They're just products of Q numbers. Okay, so this is the Hamiltonian. We have an inner product. We're all set. We need eigenfunctions. But before that, let me illustrate how this Laplacian acts in the case of two variables. So we have only a lattice, small lattice here. And so what I said is the action of the Hamiltonian on a function, which value does it have in this point? The sum of the values of the function in the neighboring points multiplied by certain Q numbers. Well, here we are in a generic point and all multiplicities are equal to 1. So here it's just really like a Laplacian. All the coefficients are 1 because the multiplicities are all 1. This is a generic point. But here it's different. We have less neighbors, of course, and the multiplicity in this point is 2. So we have different coefficients. And here at the boundary, we will also have the diagonal boundary terms, which were red in the previous slide. Yeah. So that's how the Hamiltonian acts. So here we have diagonal contributions. Not only the neighbors participate, but also the center. Here it's only the neighbors, the red dots, which participate in the value of the Laplacian in the center dot. Okay. Well, it's nice, and we want to know the eigenfunctions of this. Well, we could apply coordinate Betaansatz, find the eigenfunction and everything, but then to prove that the eigenfunctions are orthogonal would be again problematic, because again I couldn't exclude the possible degenerations in the spectrum. So we have to use something more fancy, and we will use Sklianin's quantum inverse scattering method for systems with boundary interactions to really diagonalize this system. So what's the idea? Well, the Lex matrix for the Q boson system, it's known. You can just plug it from work on the periodic Q boson system. It's the same bulk Lex matrix, and it satisfies the quantum Jan-Baxter equation here. And here is the R matrix. S is just U plus U minus 1. U is the spectral parameter in this story. And so it's just a 2x2 matrix, and it satisfies this quantum Jan-Baxter equation corresponding to this R matrix. This R matrix is actually just the XXZ trigonometric R matrix written in a little bit differently, different gauge, but it's that R matrix that we're actually dealing with. So that's known. It satisfies these commutation relations. Yeah, these sub indices indicate that we have the that we're tensoring with the identity matrix, and it's non-trivial in the first slot here in the second slot, and that's all useful. We are not usual. We're not really going to use it much. Since I have boundaries, I also need solutions of the reflection equations. Here are the left and the right reflection equation, and here are the solutions. They're also standard because the solutions of the reflection equations associated with the XXC model, they're very well known. And we only need very simple solutions which are diagonal for this story. So here I've written them in our notation. So this works for us. So these are the boundary K matrices. And with the L matrix and the K matrix, you build the monodromy matrix. So here is the periodic monodromy matrix. You just take the Lex matrix and multiply over all sides. And then you sandwich this boundary K matrix, which solves the left reflection equation. You sandwich this between this periodic monodromy matrix and its inverse here, a bit shifted. And now these are the matrix elements A, B, C, D of this big product. Those are very complicated objects, of course, if M is large. And, well, with this monodromy matrix, Sklianin tells you if you now multiply by the other boundary K matrix, then take the trace, then you get the transfer operator for the system. And they commute with different spectral parameters. And this particular transfer operator with this Lex operator and with these boundary reflection matrices also commutes with the Hamiltonian that we were considering. Actually, it was the other way around. We found the Hamiltonian using as an expansion coefficient of this transfer operator. So that's it. This gives you the quantum integrals of the model. And now you want to diagonalize the entire transfer operator. To show you that this is really an exceptionally nice model, I want to show you that we actually can compute the action of the transfer operator in this case completely explicitly. That's not standard, but this model is sufficiently nice to do it. So, well, it's no longer that only nearest neighbors of the sites are involved. You have a little bit bigger sums, and you have a little bit bigger coefficients. But the structure is like this. The value of the transfer operator acting on a function in the n particle space in a certain partition is equal to sum of two terms corresponding to the two terms here in the transfer operator. And you have to sum over things that are a little bit farther away from lambda, but they're still relatively close. This m tilde minus means that mu is so close to lambda that you can sneak up to both mu and lambda with the same partition, such that they only differ by what's called a horizontal strip. And here, you sneak up to both mu and lambda from above. If you can do that, then it means that they're sufficiently close, and that here you have a contribution. A horizontal strip, I'll just may recall, if you have a partition inside another partition, then it's a horizontal strip. The difference, the skew partition, the skew diagram is a horizontal strip if these intertwining relations are satisfied. Just means that if you kill off the boxes in lambda that correspond to mu, you get something in which in each column has only one box. So the partitions are relatively close. And so, well, it's not important. The upshot is that we have an explicit action, and I can even show you the coefficients, although maybe I'm the only one enjoying this formula. So here are the explicit formulas for the coefficients of the action of the transfer operator. People who know about Hall-Littwood polynomials, they recognize this type of formulas. These are just the Pierre coefficients of the Hall-Littwood polynomials. Yeah. It's a bit tricky. Our partitions have parts of size parts of size zero, and we take into account these multiplicities. So it's kind of shifted partitions. Okay, so this is the explicit formula, and you can prove this using induction on the number of sites. So this operator we are actually going to diagonalize, and this one commutes with the Hamiltonian. So that's the claim. To diagonalize, one applies a standard method, which is the algebraic Beta-Ansatz of Skliennen for systems with open-end boundary conditions. So you start with a vacuum site, which is in our case just the characteristic function on the empty partition, right? And now you act with these matrix elements of the monodromy matrix. These are the Beta-Ansatz creation operators, and with different spectral parameters. This is all standard. It just requires a lot of computations to really make it work. But at least Skliennen tells you what you have to do and where you will get. And you get here. This is the result. So this function, depending on the spectral parameters, it's actually a Laurent polynomial in the spectral parameters, because everything is a Laurent polynomial in the spectral parameters. And because the creation operators commute, this is a symmetric Laurent polynomial in the spectral parameters. And this Laurent polynomial is an eigenfunction of our transfer operator with this eigenvalue. So this is the hard computation to get all these things out. If these Beta-Ansatz equations are satisfied. So now, there is always a big fear if you apply this machinery, and that is that you just constructed a trivial solution of the eigenvalue problem. You have to rule that out. So, but the general theory doesn't tell you that. So we applied the big machinery, but actually we don't know at this point whether we just had a very fancy method of constructing zero on both sides. So let's really check what the Beta-Ansatz eigenfunction looks like in our case. I told you we can explicitly compute the action of the transfer operator, but we can also explicitly compute the action of these creation operators. And if we compute the explicit action of the creation operator in Fock space, and then just apply it, we get a branching rule, which expresses the n particle Beta Ansatz wave function in terms of the n minus one particle Beta Ansatz wave function. This is just the action of the creation operator concretely written down in Fock space, and the coefficients give you this branching rule. So with this, we can iteratively construct the Beta Ansatz wave functions explicitly. Here are the coefficients. They look very much similar to the coefficients that appear in the transfer operator. The only thing is that here the partitions have to be close in the following sense. We have contributions from the partitions that differ by lambda by at most two horizontal strips. Usually in theory of symmetric functions, if you have branching rules, the difference can be only one horizontal strip. But here we have hyper-octahedral symmetry finally, and that means that we have two strips of difference. So the sums are a bit bigger than that what we're used to. But this is the explicit action of the creation operator on the Beta Ansatz eigenfunction of n minus one variables. I put these heads here because I've normalized a little bit differently in such a way that everything is not only symmetric in the spectral parameters, but also has the full hyper-octahedral symmetry in the sense that I can invert the spectral parameters and that also leaves this Beta Ansatz eigenfunction invariant. So the normalization is a little bit different. And in this normalization, the coefficients are the nicest. So if we iterate this branching rule, we can, starting from the one particle wave function, iterating, construct a two particle wave function, construct a three particle wave function, and we get a closed formula for the n particle wave function. It's a kind of tableau sum for people who know about that. But remember that these partitions here, they don't differ just by a horizontal strip. They can differ by at most two horizontal strips. So the sums are really bigger than what we're used to. But it's explicit once we compute the one particle function explicitly. Well, that's easy. And here's the formula. We can easily, by act with the creation operator on the vacuum state using the commutation relations between the matrix elements of the monomy matrix, we can easily compute that the one particle function can be expressed in this way in terms of Chebyshev polynomials. And you see it's nicely a Laurent polynomial, and it's invariant with respect to inversion of the variable. And well, we have only one variable here, so it's of course symmetric, I mean the trivial action. Now, this one particle wave function is clearly not equal to zero, but what happens with the higher, the two particle, three particle? Maybe cancellations appear. Well, not really, because if we evaluate the n particle wave function in the origin, then formulas simplify considerably, and the value in the origin turns out to be just n factorial, where n is the number of variables. So that's not equal to zero. So we are very happy we have a real eigenfunction. It's once we solve the Beta Ansatz equations, of course, that I haven't done yet. But yeah, this is still, as people say, off-shell. This construction is still off-shell. So this holds for any value of the spectral parameter. But it only solves really the eigenvalue problem if the Beta Ansatz equations are satisfied. So only on shell is it really an eigenfunction. Actually not. No, that cannot happen. But it's no problem. This is really a Laurent polynomial. So even if you see things that are singular, it would disappear. But it will not happen.
Because of the beta equations.
So here are the beta equations. So now I'm going to solve the beta ansatz equations. Here they're written in a kind of a nicer way, just making a trigonometric substitution. And these are the beta equations. So you have n of them in the n particle sector. If you just kill off these coefficients, set the a plus and the a minus equal to 1, and forget about this one, then it's just a beta ansatz equation for the periodic Q-boson system. But here with open-end boundary conditions, we have a little bit richer structure. And, well, we are going to seek for eigenvalue, for spectral parameters which lie on the unit circle, this news. So that means that these xi's are going to be real. This is why this was a very good change of variables. And, well, using the method of Yang and Yang, writing the Morse function that corresponds to these beta equations, here is it. It's actually a Morse function, you can check it. And the critical equation, the equation for the critical point up to exponentiation is just this system of equations. So if you have a global minimum of this Morse function, which exists because if the arguments of the angles are very big, then this one will be dominant, it will go to infinity, and the thing is, as I said, it's a strictly convex Morse function, so there is a minimum and it's unique, and that will give a solution of the beta ansatz equation. Actually, for any lambda in this set of partitions, I have a solution. And because I have a family of Morse functions labeled by this partition in this lattice. And so for any lambda, I will get a solution, and actually all the solutions will be different. For different lambda, solutions will be different. This follows from the critical equations using standard arguments. So psi lambda nm will be the global minimum of this function in n variables on m sides and corresponding to the partition lambda, which will be in this lattice. Only real. That's enough for me. I mean, that's that's the spectral points which I see in the spectrum, really. No imaginary solutions. You can, but I can't. Right? So that's why I put everything repulsive. Yeah, in my case, t is between 0 and 1. A plus and A minus are in this story between minus 1 and 1. So it's all attractive. But that's good enough to prove this completeness or orthogonality of the beta ansatz for the Laplacian in the repulsive regime, which I actually wanted to do. Okay. So now I can summarize everything in the following theorem. So I take my beta ansatz wave function, which we've shown that it's not equal to 0. I evaluate it in the solution of the beta ansatz equations, and this will satisfy. And this will be an eigenfunction of the transfer operator. This is the eigenvalue, we also computed that, and this is the corresponding eigenvalue of the Hamiltonian, and now they form an orthogonal basis. They are orthogonal. Actually, to see that's really a basis, I only have to check that the orthogonality relation is satisfied, because I already know that my function is non-trivial. So, and I have enough of them to span the whole space, which was finite dimensional anyway. It was the space of functions over this lattice, which has the same dimension as the number of points in this lattice. So I have enough wave function. I just have to check that they're orthogonal and I'm done. Well, but that now is easy, because this thing is also self-adjoint, you can check. And the beta ansatz spectrum is non-degenerate. Now that's not completely immediate, but you can, using Casorati determinant of some polynomial that depends on the spectral parameters, you can easily check that. That's a trick I learned from Dorlas. And so the spectrum is non-degenerate, and now this means that the eigenfunctions are orthogonal, and because they're non-trivial, they really form a basis. So this proves the orthogonality and the completeness of the beta ansatz of this Q-boson model with boundary interactions. Yes, so I forgot. How much time do we have?
5 minutes.
5 minutes, yeah, okay. So I'll speed up. This is McDonald's formula for the BCN type Hall-Littlewood polynomials. Finally, I want to relate those beta ansatz wave functions to Hall-Littlewood polynomials. You see, this has the coordinate beta ansatz structure. Here are the explicit expansion coefficients. And so this is a symmetric Laurent polynomial in these variables. And the relation with the beta ansatz wave function is the following. Our beta ansatz wave function with the correct normalization, so that it's hyper-octahedral invariant, is actually equal to this Hall-Littlewood polynomial. The Hall-Littlewood polynomial has one more parameter. We have to set it to zero, and then we get what we want, right? The Hall-Littlewood polynomial for type BC, it has actually one, two, three parameters, and I only need two of them. The other parameter from the other boundary condition only enters in the beta ansatz equation, so that doesn't enter into wave function. So these things are the same. Why is that? Well, for one particle, this follows from the explicit formula that we had, and for n particle, it follows that because these Hall-Littlewood polynomials satisfy a branching rule, which was computed by Wheeler and Jean-Sustain, and it's exactly the same branching rule that we found for the beta ansatz eigenfunctions. So that's easy, and it means that we have an explicit function now, explicit coordinate representation of the n-particle beta ansatz eigenfunction. And this makes life very easy if you want to perform the continuum limit. If you don't have that, then the continuum limit is very difficult. But here we are in that position. So now I can reformulate the results in terms of BC Hall-Littlewood polynomials. The eigenvalue equation for the beta ansatz eigenfunctions give rise to a Pierre formula for the BC and Hall-Littlewood polynomials. But mind you, this is an on-shell affine Pierre formula. It only holds if the Z's are solutions of the beta ansatz equations. And we also have these orthogonality relations. Here the Z's are the polynomial variables, but for us they are spectral variables. And these Z's and Y's have to satisfy the beta ansatz equations, and then you have this orthogonality. This is not a standard orthogonality of the BCN type Hall-Littlewood polynomials, which involves integration in these variables. But here we keep them fixed, sum over the partitions, and it gives a finite dimensional discrete orthogonality relation. If you take a continuum limit of this guy, then you get the orthogonality of the beta ansatz eigenfunctions for the original Gaudin Hamiltonian on the circle, which was actually our goal, right? But we got distracted, and it was pretty interesting for us. And I will not actually dwell on the continuum limit. So this is a final formula. Just to show, I mean, we had an explicit action of the transfer operator, and that means that these BCN Hall-Littlewood polynomials satisfy this eigenvalue problem for this eigenvalue equation for this transfer operator. And so this gives kind of affine Pierre formulas, generalizing the one stemming from the Hamiltonian, and these we compute them explicitly. Again, this is an on-shell Pierre formula. It's only satisfied when the polynomial variables satisfy the beta ansatz equations. So, just in time. Thank you.
Questions or comments?
If you look at like the stochastic version of Q boson, so there's an additional parameter, or these Q Hahn systems, so then that you get more complicated eigenfunctions, and can you do the same sort of completeness?
I don't know. This already for me was a tour de force. Probably, if you can construct you have to fit it into Sklianen's formalism. If that works, then you're done. You just have to work very hard to do all the computations after that. But you have to find the L operator, you have to find the R matrix and the reflection matrices, or maybe start with periodic boundary conditions, then you're already done with the R matrix and the Lex matrix. And do the computations. But I've not done that. I mean, for me, it would be interesting, for instance, generalize the boundary conditions a little bit and maybe get the full BCN Hall-Littwood with polynomial, because I'm still missing a parameter. But so, I don't know.
Hold on.
This stochastic key is probably not going to be self-adjoint anymore. Is it a problem or not?
For me, it's a problem, but for you, it's probably not a problem.
No, I mean for the completeness.
For me, it's a problem. But anyway, you can have adjointness relations, right between the right and the left translator, and then you it can still work out. So, but I'm not really expert on that, because I always build in this self-adjointness.
Anything else? Okay, we come back at 3:30. Let's thank you.